Hello. You're listening to a show downloaded from the News with Nick feed and or watching on the website. Head on over to the website, newswithnick.com. Watch the video version of the show if you want to see it. Just had to repay to launch that thing, so please send your donations to Don't send any donations. Just say, hello. Thanks for doing a show. You're the best. I am, in fact, alive. Here it is. Here I am, alive. Here to give an update for this year. If you're new to listening, or if you haven't listened for a bit and you're wondering where we're at, it's actually 2016. This is the episode for February 2016. And there's a guy named Trump. He's trying to get elected to the presidency. And it's crazy. Okay, I think I could probably be the president. But people are really mad about this. Can Trump be on the ballot? It's the Supreme Court's biggest election test since Bush versus Gore. April Fools, it's actually 2024, and Trump is running for president. I really miss the days where there was news, and then it was hilarious for like 2 weeks. You could cover it, and then we just moved on to the next thing. Oh, okay. Elon Musk is trying to get some kids out of a cave, and he called the main guy who actually got the kids out of the cave a pedo, and now he has to go to court. All right, well, we forgot about that years ago. Now, something happens, and all of a sudden, we have to hear about it for the next 28 years. A case with the potential to disrupt Donald Trump's drive to return to the White House is putting the Supreme Court uncomfortably at the center of the 2024 presidential campaign. High Court to weigh on whether Trump...
I'm Mark Sherman. Here's I cover the Supreme Court for the Associated.
Wow, this is a very boring guy, but I guess he doesn't find the Supreme Court very interesting.
Press. The Supreme Court will hear a case that could alter the 2024 presidential election. The case comes from Colorado, where the state Supreme Court ruled that former President Donald Trump can be kept off the state's Republican presidential primary ballot.
When I scrolled down,
because of his
playing.
Efforts to overturn his loss in the 2020 election.
That All right, I can't. The dispute stems from the push by Republican and independent voters in Colorado to kick Trump off the state's Republican primary ballot because of his efforts to overturn his 2020 election loss to Democrat Joe Biden, culminating in the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. Colorado's highest court determined that Trump incited a riot in the nation's capital and is ineligible to be president again as a result and should not be on the ballot for the state's primary on March 5th. A victory for the Colorado voters would amount to the declaration from the justices, who include three blah, 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 that he did engage in insurrection and is barred by the 14th Amendment from holding office again. Okay, so Colorado's like, well, the Constitution says that you can't do this one thing and be president. So let's see what the Constitution says. 14th Amendment. No person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. But Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each House, remove such disability. Huh? Okay. So, if you take an oath, hello, I'm the president, I swear that I'll be good. And then, you do an insurrection, then you're not allowed to be the president again, unless 2/3 of Congress say, okay, it's fine. He's not disabled. Remove such disability. He wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad of an insurrection. Now, when I read this, I was like, insurrection? I didn't even realize that was in the Constitution because I'm not very, I don't read the Constitution all the time. But they've been saying the word insurrection ever since January 6th. Is that a coincidence? Or did someone, like, have they been like, oh, insurrection, if we keep saying this word over and over again, by the time it becomes 2024, Trump won't be allowed to be on the ballot. So we'll see what happens. So does this mean that Colorado... Okay, hang on. So a divided Colorado Supreme Court declared former President Donald Trump ineligible for the White House under the U.S. Constitution's Insurrection Clause and removed him from the state's presidential primary ballot. So maybe it's too early to know, but like, okay, he's off the primary, big whoop. He's probably going to win the primary. Nobody cares about that. Is he off the main ballot? And if he's off the main ballot, what are they going to do? Just put only people who aren't Republicans on the main ballot? Let's see if there's any info. He could not... The court stayed its decision until January 4th or until the U.S. Supreme Court rules on the case. Okay, so this is going to be this week that the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments as to whether or not Trump can be barred from the ballot, which I guess would be a big deal. I mean, obviously, you can still write someone in, but I don't know that I don't know that enough Trump voters would care. Like, oh, I have to write something? If I have to write, I am not going to that ballot booth. So what's been going on? The three people who listen to this are going to be like, Nick, you used to record all the time, at least once a month, and now you haven't recorded for 6-8 months. Here you are on your website. You claim to want people to pay attention to you. I mean, maybe the website just is abandoned, but it's not, because every time that WordPress update breaks the website, I still go in and I fix it because I want it to work. Here it is. It's the website. But Nick, you haven't updated for months. What the heck could be happening? Are you just laying in bed 24/7 going, when will I have enough energy to do a show again? Yes. No, I mean, things happen in life, right? You know, things are, you're like, well, now I have to move again, or I'm switching jobs again, I didn't buy a new car, but these things happen, and who's got time to be sitting around looking at news all the time? Oh, wait, literally everyone, because that's how the news sells. Okay, anyway, point is, I've been extremely lazy. But also, it's not like nothing's happened. So I did a whole football season again. We'll get into that. I switched jobs again. Yep. Sorry about that, folks. Who knew that you could protest your company, get photographed by the news, be put on the front page. Everyone sees it. The whole company is like, wow, you were the leader of the protests and you still work here. But then you walk out. You're like, I'm sick of this job. And then you walk off. No notice, 14-second notice, not 14-day notice. And then people will still hire you. They never found out about that stuff, I don't think. But it doesn't matter, even if they did. Everyone loves me because I am a great worker, right? Let's see. So switch jobs, moved again, trying to find a place. You know, what am I supposed to do? There's so many places to live. Like, you look at a map. Okay, where should I live? There's like a lot of places to choose from. So that's going on. Took a family trip to Oregon, to the West Coast in Oregon. So we take a family trip to Oregon, stay in a house up on a cliff, basically overlooking the ocean for about a week and a half. Very nice. And on one of the first days, no, it wasn't even one of the first days, about halfway through, it's a very windy day. We unfortunately got some weather, right? It's up north, right? It's not Southern California weather for staying on the ocean. It's Oregon weather. So we've got this hot tub and whatever on the deck. And we didn't strap down the top. We didn't strap down the hot tub cover. So all of a sudden, people are yelling, oh, the hot tub cover is just gone. It's been blowing for a little bit here, and the hot tub cover is just missing. Nick, we need your help. So I run out, and I start videoing. Like, I'm looking for the hot tub cover. Where could it have gone? The only logical thing that could have happened is the hot tub cover blew off of the hot tub and went over the cliff toward the ocean. I'm looking around. I climb up to the edge of the cliff and I point my camera over the bushes. I see something gray in the distance. I zoom in.
I found it!
You can see this on the video version of the show. So I'm like, okay, everyone, I found it. It's over the cliff, down near, on the rocks near the beach. And when I say cliff, it's not like the Grand Canyon, but you wouldn't want to traverse this direction over the edge. You have to go around on the road and then over into the beach and then past the sign that says, do not climb on the rocks, and then climb on the rocks like this. Now, there's a picture of me and Sophie climbing up the rocks and grabbing the hot tub cover and having to carry it all the way back to the house. That was pretty funny. A couple days later, we're walking along the beach, and there's a lady. She's hanging out up the beach a bit, almost toward the walkway where you would exit the beach and go back to the main road. But she's just standing there, kind of like scooping sand with her hands. But she looks way too old to be someone who would just be making a sandcastle. Not that, no judgment, but you usually don't see people who are like 72 making a sandcastle and just digging in sand for fun. So as we get closer to her, she goes, help! Help! Come over here! We get over there. She's like, I'm stuck! Her foot is in, it's quicksand. You never expect to run into quicksand in real life. But her foot has stepped into like a really soft spot of the beach, and it's in a puddle, and it's stuck way down in the mud. And she's like, I can't move. If I try to move, my leg will break. And I took a picture of it after a little bit of digging. Sophie was able to dig out her ankle and her feet, and the lady eventually lifted her foot out and then walked, said, thank you, and walked away very quickly. But before she did so, I was able to get a photo of her standing in the puddle that you can see on the video version of the show. Maybe we'll put it in the show notes. And I don't know. I guess that's not that funny of a story in real, but when you're there, you're like, oh, you only see this in movies. Someone is stuck in quicksand. When we got up to her, I was like, how long have you been here? Do you need like a snack? I was imagining a movie where she'd been there for like 4 hours, just waiting for a rescue to come, or a rescue 911 episode. I was like, thank goodness you came down here. I've been stuck here for hours. I was going to go home and get her a granola bar or something. Okay, so what other news stories have happened? Let's see. A year ago, a little over a year ago, they were hunting for this Idaho murderer, right? The Idaho murderers. There's a crime scene here. Four people have been found dead in this house. And we're like, how could you ever find the murderer? There's going to be no way. There's no clues. There's no leads. There's nothing. No one will ever find this murderer. Okay, a couple of weeks later, they were like, okay, we found the murderer. It's some guy named Brian Kohlberger, right? And he looks like, he doesn't look like a murderer. Or maybe he does, but in such a formal way. Like, oh, yes, I am a very calculated murderer. Like, he's skinny, he's tall, he's relative, I don't know, he looks smart and normal. But that was over a year ago he got arrested at this point. So I tried to follow up on the story. Like, what's going on? The Idaho college murderer suspect Brian Kohlberger could stand trial in summer 2024 as prosecutors request new dates. What? Idaho prosecutors have requested the trial of murder suspect Brian Kohlberger, charged with killing four college students, to begin next summer. To avoid coinciding with dates when local high school and college classes are in session. All right, we're going to read the court motion in a moment. Let's see if this video has any information.
Is into the courtroom when the man accused of killing four University of Idaho students goes on trial. That man, Brian Kohlberger, his attorney is saying.
I mean, he kind of looks like Kylo Ren if you squint your eyes. So maybe, maybe that guy looks like a murderer?
Coverage would actually threaten his right to a fair trial. Meanwhile, 48 Hours has new details about the case itself. Peter Van Sant spoke with two of the victims' families who shared information about what happened the night of the murders.
There's new details about the case. We're going to I have not watched this video. We're going to find out what's going on. This is so fascinating because as far as I know, there's no motive been announced. There's not much information about this guy at all other than, oh, he did a murder and then he ran away. And then we found him.
His report airs tomorrow as 48 Hours returns to CBS for season number 36. Here's an early look.
It's been a long and painful journey for the families of Kaylee Gonsalves, Madison Mogan, Zana Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin, the four University of Idaho students who were stabbed to death in the pre-dawn hours of November 13th, 2022.
Do you ever dream of your sister?
Yeah, I've had some dreams of her.
Wow, this is so sad.
Some peace knowing that I know she's okay.
Zana Kernodle's sister Jasmine and father Jeffrey are speaking out for the first time since Zana's murder.
It just happened, you know? What do? You can't do a damn thing.
Everybody's going to work and you look out the window and there's kids running down the street laughing and you're just like, how can you be out there playing? My daughter's dead.
On the night of the murders, Christy and Steve Gonsalves' daughter, Kaylee, was in the same bed as her childhood friend, Maddie Mogan. The Gonsalves' say coroner, Kathy Mabbitt, told them before a gag order, the killer attacked Maddie first, then moved on to Kaylee.
What? There's evidence to show that she awakened and tried to get out of that situation.
They say...
At first I was going to say, how can they know that? But yeah, you can. I guess you can see, like, from the position of the DNA, like, who moved the most? The one who got attacked second moved the most.
She cried out, and her wounds show she fought for her life.
The way the bed was set up is what...
She was trapped.
She was trapped.
Zana also fought back. According to her father, she had severe defensive wounds.
She went down fighting.
I believe so. It's upsetting to think about.
She was always a strong, very strong person.
A judge has entered a plea of not guilty on Brian Koberger's behalf, but he is not the person the families want us to remember.
He's not important other than what he did and being held accountable. I'll be here to keep
allegedly
reminding people who these victims are.
You can see Peter's full report the night of the Idaho student murders as part of 48 Hours season premiere.
Comes now the state of Idaho buying through the Lita County prosecuting attorney respectfully moves this court for the scheduling order addressing without limitation the following: scheduling a jury trial to run approximately 6 weeks. The state proposes that the court schedule trial for the summer of 2024 and that the trial dates avoid times when the Moscow High School and the area universities are in session. As the court is aware, Moscow High School is directly adjacent to the courthouse premises, and already the significantly increased amount of media and other vehicles related to this case has strained available parking, as well as safety and convenience for pedestrians, including students. Okay. All right, hang on. Let's move on. The court is also aware that when the local universities are in session, it is not infrequent for area lodging to become unavailable due to university-related activities such as sporting events, graduation, etc. So they're saying, okay, because this is going to be such a media fiasco and everyone's going to want to come, can you not do it when there's other like stuff going on? Because we don't have enough hotels for the show. The state also requests that the court set a daily trial schedule of 8:30 a.m. to approximately 3 p.m. for the trial of this length. It is appropriate to afford jurors some amount of time to tend to their personal affairs. Additionally, having more time in the afternoon allows for better preparation by the parties and allows for reasonable opportunities and time for the court and counsel to address any motions or matters that routinely arise during the course of jury trials. In its August 22, 2023 scheduling order, the court afforded the defendant an additional opportunity to provide notice of alibi in accordance with court rule and statute. The state submits that the defendant has already been afforded this opportunity and that the court heard arguments on the motions relating to such. The state submits the opportunity for the defendant to disclose an alibi, notify the state of the same has passed, and ask that the court not reopen this issue. Okay, so we're looking to get this scheduled. It is not officially scheduled. They're just trying to schedule it. Now, maybe if media coverage or hotels is such a big deal, maybe we should be relocating our courts to stadiums. How about that? I mean, if we can put concerts there, maybe we should have an, maybe we should move it to like a stage. Like, okay, is there a school auditorium that we could use with a stage and a balcony instead of jamming everyone into a little room? Why do they need to put everyone in such a little room? Just set it up with a much bigger audience available. Put it in the Senate. No, that's not enough seats. Put it in a movie theater. Or yeah, put it in a stadium where just in the middle is the trial and you just fill the stadium. But you have to sell tickets, right? To offset the cost of all the security. But I suppose that would be against the rule. Like, oh, we have an open court system. You don't have to pay to come in here. All right. Speaking of stadiums, I did an entire season of trying again to be a football official. Remember 3 years ago, I was like, I wonder how you become a football official. Because I'd watch TV and I'd be like, wow, I know the rules of football. Maybe I should just be a football official. So I looked up how to do it and signed up, and then I was. Boy, oh boy, those people like to yell. It is way different on the field than it is on TV. On TV, you're like, it looks like they're a little bit mad at the officials. In real life, they are really mad sometimes. I had a game where, and it's not even just that they're mad, it's just that, sometimes the coaches have nothing better to do. And this isn't to say that, I know it's very level one for an official to be like, wow, every coach and every parent is terrible and I'm the greatest official ever. I'm not, obviously, the greatest official ever. I'm just there. But when it's the coach going, hey, you messed up this call, the guy was down or whatever. And then you go, obviously he wasn't down. Like, I know that sometimes I might make the wrong call or not see it the same way as you, but that was clear. And then the coach goes, yeah, I know. I was just trying to see if I could change your mind. Right? Okay, that's a little rude, right? You got it. If you're going to yell at me, at least yell when you think there's an actual issue, not when, something went against us. Now I will just yell at the official. Very annoying. So I've got this game. I had this game also. This is a play I had. I'm a working back judge, so I'm off the field or off the right side of the screen. I'm not off the field. I'm actually literally on the field. I just don't know words anymore. And so if you want to see this, you're going to have to see the video version of the show. But what happens here is a number 7 from red, a pass is thrown by white, diagonally across the middle of the field toward number 24 of white. While the ball is in the air, number 7 of red runs into the side of 24. So 24 is looking at the ball. He's trying to head upfield. Number 7 runs directly into him, bumps him off his route so he can't continue toward the ball. That is, you're not supposed to do that. While the ball's in the air, yes, each player can go for the ball, but if you play the person and stop them from running their route, that is what's called pass interference. You can't do that. And that's what he does. He ran into the route rather than play the ball. So I'm standing in the back, and I go, that looked like pass interference. So I wait like a second, and then I throw my flag, right? In the NFL, something happens, and that flag is going immediately. So it kind of annoys people when it takes a second and then a flag throws. Okay, fine. That's fair. It would annoy me too. Like if you just saw your team make what you thought was a good play, like good defense, and then, it's a second and a half later, the officials say, no, against the rules. That's annoying, but that's what happened. So I throw this flag. I call pass interference. As soon as I throw it, you can see in the video, but you can't hear it. But you can see the coaches from the red sideline all come onto the field pretty much. And they were all yelling, that was horrible, worst call I've ever seen. Horrible, horrible. And I actually go over there and talk to them. Like, a lot of times the officials will just ignore the coaches. So I go over there. They give me an earful. They say, that was horrible. He was playing the ball, blah, 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 blah. So I spend the whole rest of the game. I mean, I try not to dwell on it because I have a rest of the game to handle. But even going back to the locker room, I'm like, man, I wonder if that really was horrible. I see the video. It's clear as day. A good pass interference call. So annoying. But anyway, this is just the learning part of this. But at least the coaches did say, hey, you know, we didn't like that call, but that official came over and talked to us rather than ignore us, blah, blah, blah. Here's another point. I know that last time I talked about this, I was like, I'm not necessarily supposed to be talking about how we officiate the games, but I don't know. Report me. Call the news, I guess. There's an official talking about, but there's no rule against it. You're just not supposed to make, like, public comments about why you did things the way you did them, because it can be, I don't know. It'd be weird if the news started reporting on, oh, this official said that there were two kids fighting and he completely looked the other way. All right, so this one is actually a broadcast game. It was broadcast on YouTube with like announcers and everything. So the rules of the game are that after the play is over, so a guy's tackled, they have 40 seconds to get to the next play and snap the ball again. It's the play clock.
And a direct snap to Ballesteri. His first carry of the night.
So we got
is
this
still going.
Running
cuts it upfield, spins at the 40, still powering his way at midfield, and look at this. Still alive at the Dover 40, and finally brought down.
And you can
down
see me come in from the bottom here, and I put my hand on my timer on my belt, which is this 40-second timer, and I flip the thing because the play is over.
On the sideline at the Green Wave 36-yard line.
BG sideline in student section, loving it, Nick.
Now we're going to skip ahead
because
they're going to show a replay. And so I hit the switch on my belt, and then I'm lining up for the next play, and it's about to buzz. It's like, okay, I give the 10-second warning. I give the 5-second warning. It buzzes. 0 seconds left. So I throw my flag. You're going to see this in the video. And this isn't the NFL, so we give them, I don't know, 42 seconds, let's call it, 43. So by the time I'm saying, okay, you took too long, this is a flag, it's delay of game, by the time I say that, it's not like, okay, it's 40.01 seconds, even though I would be someone to do that, I get it. But no, there was plenty of time here. So I throw my flag, and you're going to see it mentioned on the video.
From Alvern. Well, Steve, that one goes for 25 yards, and all 25 of them came after first contact.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
There's Ballesteri looking like a moose out
Jonathan
there.
Jonathan Santana.
Quarterback standing there, and I remember him doing this. He's standing there. He's about to snap the ball, but then he looks to the sideline. He's like, what's the play again? What? So he's taking way too long.
The same idea. Just came to play tonight.
Ballesteri was
there
earlier in the second half.
And my flag falls
on the receiving end.
Oh. And you can see the referee, which is the white hat, the white hatted guy, and on football teams, football officiating crews, the white hat referee is the crew chief. So he has the ability to make judgment calls or overrule any other person on the crew. He's the final say. So you can see him in the video staring down at me after I threw my flag. And walks through the offensive line and the defensive line directly toward me.
Of one of two 70-yard touchdown passes from Mike McDonough. Yeah.
Now, normally what would happen, I was so confused at this point, because normally what would happen is I throw the flag, delay of game, and I signal or I get on the radio and I go, it's a delay of game, Mr. Referee, because it's my call. As the back judge, I have the timer, and I say when it's taking too long. So I go, it's going to be a delay of game, and the referee would say, okay, and he would signal the booth, and we'd march 5 yards, and we'd reset. It's really strange that the referee starts walking toward me. So he starts walking toward me, toward the backfield. I'm like, I'm really confused. Why is he coming toward me?
and showing you what he can do in the run game there.
Yeah, you can feel how bad both of these teams
here he comes.
Want to beat each other
camera
and get into those down. Corner finals. When
camera
it,
pans to him walking directly up to me.
When it really...
And I say, I have a delay of game. It's delay of game. Why is he walking up to me? He goes, that wasn't delay of game. That was not 40 seconds. I said, it was. I have it on my hip. It's 40 seconds. He's like, your timer's messed up. I'm like, okay. I mean, call it off, I guess.
Well, we got a flag down here. Looks like the back judge, Nick Ryder, threw the flag. It's down inside the 20-yard line. And it's going to be a penalty, I believe, against the Cardinals.
Yep, I think you're right.
So I'm not going to argue with this referee on the field. It's his call, I guess. He has the right to overrule me, and he's been doing it 20 years. I've been doing it 3, so I'm like, well, maybe I went temporarily insane, and I don't know how this timer works.
Since halftime.
After crew discussion, there is no foul on
now they're going to pick it up.
We'll reset
wow. You get the announcement from referee Jeff Kleiner. They're going to pick that flag up, so no penalty.
As we say, communication is good. Want to get it right.
So they pick up the flag, and I spend the rest of the game going, how the heck did I mess up that timer? And I spend the rest of my drive home going, how the heck did I mess up the timer? This is a key moment in this game. Green is up by 7. It's about 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter. White needs to get the ball back and score a touchdown to tie this game. And there's been a lot of scoring both ways in this game. And they're at the 35-yard line going toward the end zone. And a delay of game here would make it 1st and 15, not 1st and 10. So it could set them back, make them have to go even further for the next first down, and White could get a good stop here and get the ball back. But no, I make a good call. I'm spending my whole drive home going, how did I mess up that timer? I get on the computer as quick as I can and watch the play. I'm like, did I mess up the timer? And I time it. And I go, that was easily delay of game. What is this guy doing? Walking back to me and saying, that's not delay. Are you nuts? I was so mad, and I'm still mad to this day. So that's how my football season went. All right, let's get into some news here. This was a meme news. Elmo's wellness check uncovers existential dread and despair on social media, NBCNews.com. And when I say a meme news, it's like, oh, this is a funny news story. Everyone's sharing it. Thousands of people are unloading their life problems on Elmo this week after the Red Muppet posed a casual question on X. How is everyone doing?
And warmth and understanding.
Everybody feels lots of emotions, like happy, sad, surprised, and frustrated.
Elmo has touched countless lives for more than 4 decades. And this week, that connection...
In fact, the question, which was posted on X, opened the floodgates to a deluge of internet users eager to vent to the children's show character that had somehow signed himself up to be the internet's newest therapist. Elmo, I'm suffering existential dread over here, a user replied. Every morning, I cannot wait to go back to sleep. Every Monday, I cannot wait for Friday to come. Okay, this is the dumbest news story ever. Of course, obviously, no one's going to write to the Elmo bot and be like, actually, went for a nice run today and had a nice bowl of oatmeal and a banana, and I'm actually very happy. Everything's going well. My family's happy. Anyone who's on X is not happy. That is not a good jut. You need to have a random sampling of Elmo's asking people. Now, I don't know how you get that, but just because you're on X and you tell Elmo your life is terrible doesn't mean everyone's life is terrible. It just means most people's are. Or if you read too much X/Twitter/news, then your life is more likely to be terrible. Ooh, we love stories like this. Family wants answers after a baby forgotten inside a closed daycare in Philadelphia. Philadelphia police are investigating after a 6-month-year-old baby girl was left alone inside a daycare facility after it closed on Thursday night.
Park neighborhood. A six-month-old baby was left inside a daycare alone after the facility closed. When family members went to pick up their child, the lights were out and it was closed there. The parents exclusively speaking to Action News. Action News reporter Katie Catro.
She's on the scene. We had a six-month-old baby left inside here.
With that story tonight, Katie.
And Ashari, when we spoke with that little girl's parents, they say they automatically thought the worst. Thankfully, their little girl is okay, but they are absolutely horrified by the whole situation.
I was hoping that somebody didn't take my daughter. And I was hoping that she was okay.
This is six-month-old Amora Banks. Her parents are speaking out tonight after their daughter was left alone, locked up inside her daycare.
I mean, if you're going to leave the baby inside, at least the doors were locked.
It was weird that they were closed because they're usually open. So the first thing that came to mind was...
It was weird that they were closed because they're usually open. It happened around 5:30 p.m. on the of some block. The family called 911 when they arrived and found the daycare closed and locked up. It was weird that they were closed because they're usually open. So the first thing that came to mind was they gave them to the wrong person. The family says they have other children and they've been coming to the daycare on Whitaker Avenue for the past 6 months. They usually pick up their daughter around 3 p.m., but on Thursday they came at 5:30 p.m. Police say the daycare was supposed to close at 6 p.m. At the end of the day, a six-month-year-old baby should not be left alone. All right, let's see if they say this in the video.
They gave them to the wrong person.
The mother, Jessie Flores, says she has another child but has never used daycare before. But she's been coming here to the 4400 block of Whitaker Avenue for the past 3 months.
Okay. I would not go to this daycare. And not because of this kid. This is a shady looking daycare. We offer 24-hour childcare. It's got a sign that's kind of faded along the top. And then way to the right of this photo of the childcare is A and B beer distributor. Are they right next to a beer distributor, literally? Like they're in the same brick building. It says childcare, now enrolling, A and B beer distributor. I may have to look up where this is.
Block of Whitaker Avenue for the past 3 months. Parents say they usually pick up their daughter around 3 p.m. Today they came at 5:30. When they arrived, the gate was down and the lights were off. The daycare is supposed to close at 6 p.m., according to police, who rushed to help the parents rescue their daughter inside.
Skipping ahead, see if there's any other...
And the fire department actually had to cut the front grate and remove it.
Finally, in the corner, police found the six-month-old baby girl sleeping in a car seat in the dark.
At the end of the day, a six-month baby should not be in there left alone.
Now, police did take the baby to St. Christopher's Hospital to be checked out for dehydration. The mother tells us she was drinking a lot. As for the investigation, police say they have interviewed the owner of the daycare as well as multiple people who work at the daycare. The parents do tell us that the owner did apologize to them multiple times.
All right.
Reporting live in Hunting Park, Katie Catro, Channel 6.
Well, that was fascinating. All right, we're looking this up. A and B beer distributor. All right, it's A&B Beer Dist. It is on 4440 Whitaker Avenue, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Let's see what kind of reviews they've got. I've been getting my beverages from this place for the last 4 years. They are the best, and their cat is just so humongously cute. It's always been a pleasant visit. The owners are friendly, and the beer I like is cheaper there. Try Stella. Good prices and clean place. Good people, and they are nice. All right, I'm going to drop a little street view guy. Oh my god. It is literally in the same brick building. It's directly next. If you were a worker of the childcare, you could take 10 steps from the childcare, from New Horizons Childcare Solutions, and buy some beer. This is amazing. Maybe I shouldn't judge. you know, we're all for no zoning and stuff like that, right? Every business should be allowed to exist wherever it wants. But would you bring your kids to the childcare that's right next to the beer distributor? People are coming in all hours of the day and night getting their beer. I've thought of, like, childcare and daycare and stuff. That is a very high demand service. There's almost always people going, there's not enough childcare services. So I've been like, how hard could it be? Can I just start? Can I just, like, get a building and be like, come on, kids, hang out with me and your parents will pay me, I don't know, $1,000 a day, and you'll just hang, because everyone's saying, like, oh, we can't find any childcare and it's so expensive. And I'm like, well, if all you have to do is play with a bunch of kids all day and you get a ton of money, maybe that's worth it. Doesn't seem that hard. Like, what kind of degree could you possibly, you don't have to know science, you don't have to know engineering, you don't have to know how to fix a car or do welding or plumbing. Like, how hard could it be? Okay, kids, come on in. Have some beer. We'll fix them up next door. Just don't die. And we get thousands of dollars because your parents are too busy to take care of you. So we'll do it. The problem is, it's just such high risk, right? Like, if just one kid escapes, or just one kid dies, or just one kid so much as gets locked very securely inside the building by accident, then you're in huge trouble. Like, I've worked jobs before where it's like, oh, we messed up that order and we sent out a whole bunch of stuff wrong. Or the thing we were supposed to make, we accidentally dropped and we broke it and now we have to remake it. Or the program we were supposed to write didn't work the first time. Oh, we're going to have to rewrite it. I guess you can't really mess up with a kid, or people get real mad and then you get in the news. So that's the only problem, is if you hired the wrong person and they let a kid escape, then you're out of business. But until that point, you could make a ton of money. Father and son are arrested after RPGs are found after a threat to the Rancho Bernardo High School. This is crazy. We've got a father and son duo getting arrested. High school student and his father were arrested after police served a search warrant in response to the teen threatening to shoot up the Rancho Bernardo High School. San Diego police confirmed to NBC 7 that the Rancho Bernardo, I'm really tired of saying Rancho Bernardo at the moment, going to be honest. So we're going to just call it the RB. San Diego police confirmed that the RB High School campus is safe and had been swept for any explosive devices. Police received several reports last Friday saying the suspected teen was showing concerning videos and making threatening statements against the school for Tuesday, January 30th. Oh, he's very specific. That same day, the student, who was not named because he's underage, was arrested and taken to juvenile hall.
Guns, materials to make guns, and explosives. NBC7's Shondell Maniz is in Rancho Bernardo right now. She has the latest RV on the investigation. Shondell.
School just let out here at Rancho Bernardo. Police tell us that they've swept the campus for explosives. And
there's kids in the background waving to the news. Hey, we're on the news because of the possible shooting.
Point that all is clear, everything is safe. All of this started actually on Friday when a school spokesperson tells us that a student who isn't being named showed his classmates concerning video. The nature of that video also isn't being released. And then he also told his classmates that he was going to shoot up the school today. The students took that information immediately to the principal's office.
Wow, where do we start? Christine Peck with Poway Unified School District says, in hindsight, everyone reacted as they should have. She says once students reported their classmate who threatened to shoot up the school, police arrested the teen the same day.
They heard some statements that were really concerning, and then I think by what was found in the search warrant, those fears were valid.
With that search warrant, police found dozens of ghost guns, including assault rifles, ghost gun makers, and a grenade launcher.
They seem nice. I mean,
So I don't really know what's going on over there. It's concerning.
This neighbor who didn't want to be identified saw all the investigators outside over the weekend. It's the first time she's seen police in her neighborhood in the 3 years she's lived here.
No, it's terrifying. We all think we've got this secure little neighborhood here. It just takes one person to come in and just change the dynamics completely.
She says the family just moved in within the past 2 months. Police also arrested the student's father, 45-year-old Neil Anders, who faces several gun possession and manufacturing charges.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Let's see if there's any information. Okay. Dear Bronco families, this is the letter from the school. Late yesterday afternoon, we were notified by students that they had witnessed another student showing concerning videos and making threatening statements against others and the school. Law enforcement was contacted immediately and launched an investigation yesterday afternoon. After deputies met with the student, they were taken into custody and all families of impacted students were notified. We want to assure you that we will be working very close with law enforcement and the city attorney's office to address the matter appropriately. I want to commend the students who acted responsibly when reporting what they heard. Please use this opportunity to remind your children if they see something, say something. Okay, but there's no link here between the kid being stupid and the dad, other than the fact that the kid and the dad are kid and dad and live at the same house. So the kid goes into school. He shows a funny video. Or whatever, concerning video, but they're not saying what it was. Could have been anything that the school thinks is concerning. And then he says, I'm going to shoot up the school tomorrow. Very specific. Why would he say that? Police took out a gun violence restraining order at the teen's home on Tuesday morning, unregistered, unserialized firearms, manufacturing supplies to make ghost guns, as well as a large number of explosives and RPGs were found at the home. This is so weird. The kid goes in, says all this stuff. They say, oh my goodness, you can't say that. Okay, we're going to your house. We're searching it. They search it. They find what alleged, obviously, are the dad's explosives. Why is the dad got all these explosives? Why is he telling the kid, we have all these explosives? Why is the kid being all weird and going to the school and saying, we're going to shoot the school? Is the dad like, oh my God, kid, why did you say that? I wasn't even going to shoot up the school with these. I just wanted to have them. Why did you say it? Now I'm arrested for having all these guns. I wasn't even going to do anything. I didn't say a threat. My kid said the threat. Arrest him. Don't arrest me. I didn't do anything. It doesn't say that the kid had any of these guns. So weird. We'll never know what happened. Editor's note. A previous version of this story stated police referred to the dad as a doomsday prepped style person, but that hasn't been removed. Okay. Very strange. Guess we'll never learn anything about that either. Good luck to them, I suppose. All right, this week we've got a rally happening in Texas. I just heard about this. God's Army protesters rally in Texas against migrant crossings. Trucks, vans, and RVs. Hundreds of people converged Saturday in southern Texas to rally against what they say is a migrant invasion and to demand tough new controls at the U.S. border with Mexico. So this is kind of like when they did the Unite the Right rally, but it's a bunch of people who have decided that they're going to travel from Virginia to Texas and protest, I guess, migrants. One of the event's organizers suggesting holy backing for their cause has called those massing here God's Army. Under the slogan, Take Our Border Back, these activists traveling in convoys from across the United States have been arriving in towns along the border to camp and protest this weekend. Migration on the border is out of control, 43-year-old Robin Ferranzo, who was guarding the entrance to the ranch where protesters are meeting. All right, so let's see. We've got a story here. We're going to see what this guy has to say.
Convoy is a peaceful assembly that will bring light to those problem sets, period.
Well, first tonight, a convoy of hundreds of people from across...
across the country are in Dripping Springs tonight to put the national spotlight on immigration.
That is a lot
tomorrow,
of people.
The Take Our Border Back convoy will make its way to parts of the Arizona and Texas border. Many in the group who are referring to themselves as God's Army started their journey all the way in Virginia.
And as our Monica Madden reports, there was a push and pull over what the goal of this convoy exactly is.
It's been an adventure.
People from all across the country making long journeys to make a message.
Rented a car to Phoenix through a snowstorm, flew to Dallas, was supposed to fly to Fort Lauderdale to Norfolk. That was canceled. I went to Orlando.
Joshua James Ryan Lawrence is from neighboring New Mexico, but crisscrossed the country to start with the convoy in Virginia.
Hey, what compels someone?
This is like if you're going to go to like a music festival or Burning Man, but instead it's just, okay, we're all going out to the convoy. Yeah, I'm going to need a long weekend off work. Oh, yeah, what you doing? We're just doing a little trip to Texas. Just a little trip to Texas. Are you in the convoy? No, I'm not in the convoy. Are you kidding me? Those people are crazy.
To go through all of that.
I roll with God, and God just provides, and I listen.
Depending on who you asked, their goals of the trip are mixed.
Man, we're going to be praying. We're going to be doing revival. We're just going to be being a show of force.
The rally at times feeling more like a holiday picnic, sprinkled with MAGA merch.
While some had raised concerns about this convoy.
This is basically just the libertarian. This is basically like Pork Fest, but for gathering at the border to stop migrants.
Possibly getting violent. It has been a largely peaceful gathering here in Dripping Springs, with the messaging and the speeches ranging from calls for prayers at the border once they get there to musician Ted Nugent referring to President Joe Biden as a, quote, devil scum snake.
And I'd like to apologize on behalf of we the people for allowing this piece of to get in the White House.
While many called for prayers, prominent figures like Nugent and former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin were more confrontational.
Sarah Palin was there?
We have to stand tall. We have to stand up and fight for what is right. It's unconscionable. It's treasonous what our own federal government is doing to us in actually sanctioning an invasion.
I know, right? Is Biden having an insurrection by letting all the migrants in here? Is that an insurrection? He took an oath, and now a bunch of migrants are coming. He's not protecting the country. Insurrection.
A lot of people we met were locals just stopping by, debating joining the convoy.
What? He has a Hitler's mustache. Sorry, that was a very loud thing to yell. There's just a guy in glasses and a bucket hat or whatever you would call those things, and he just has a very short mustache. Very short left to right. Very interesting.
Joining the convoy. The
person I was going to ride with told me that it's unpredictable.
While others like Lawrence are all in.
We really do want to stand up against this, and that government has to listen to us.
All right, their website is taketheborderback.com. We're going to head on over there in a second. Let's see if the news people have any more info.
Subpoenaed by the January 6th committee. James Phil Waldron, a retired Army colonel, was subpoenaed.
Nope. Takeourborderback.com. We the people are taking our border back. Pack your campers, cars, RVs, and trucks. Bring your chairs, a coat, and a kind heart. Check back daily for updates. Here's the convoy calendar. All right, we're going to click the convoy calendar. Okay, February 3rd, that's yesterday. California rally in San Diego County. Join We the People February 3rd in California for this peaceful rally from 9 to 11 a.m. Pack your campers, truck, blah, blah, blah. February 3rd is also Arizona. February 3rd is Texas. Final destination is Cornerstone Children's Ranch at Quemado, Texas. So here's a video from on the ground. So just a guy driving. Wow. He's just taking a video of all the cars that are parked here. That is a lot of trucks. Skipping ahead. That is a lot of flags, too. I browsed this guy's YouTube, and he also has a video where he's basically migrant, but he's border patrol watching, like how people would go cop watching and they would pull up on cops who are pulling people over or talking to kids who are open drinking, and we'd record them and it'd be funny. Well, he's doing migrant patrol watching, but he's pro migrant patrol. Here he is. He found a family of migrants getting questioned by the authorities, and he has them 25 feet away from him, and he turns the camera on himself with them in the background.
Eagle Pass, Texas, 277, right there between Eagle Pass and Norman, and Border Patrol here.
Okay, this is nearly unintelligible.
Eight individuals crossed into the United States illegally right here, and they will get picked up. They will most likely go to the detention center that was right up the road.
All right, way too noisy to play anything here. Let's use any more info. Well, that's funny. On their website, there's a scrolly thing at the bottom, and you would think it would say Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It just says Twitter over and over and over again. Twitter, 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 Twitter. Let's head to their Twitter and see if there's any info. 22 hours ago, We the People, Maine. Oh, it's a 10-hour-long video. What? Oh, it's just their main stage.
That's a problem, isn't it?
Wow.
How can we elect the right peoples if the machines are all... That's got to change. Border security expert.
Man, if you've got nothing to do for 10 and a half hours, head on over to We the People, Maine on Twitter, and you can watch the 10-hour-long main stage video. Let's skip ahead. See what's going on. Oh, here's a guy. They all have the same hat, by the way.
Is against law. It's a felony in the United States. Followed that by 1911, and this one should be easier to remember. In 1911, 1325, anyone who aids and abets, basically is what this said, who aids and abets or harbors bringing people into the United States, is also a felon. So we've got the laws on the books. That also includes in that code anyone who marries a citizen to evade the law or prosecution. In any case, I don't want to go too far. Really, all I had to say was to thank you for all being here.
All right, head on over to takeourborderback.com. You're going to get information on hotels, where to stay at for this convoy. You're going to get the maps on where the convoy's headed. It heads from Virginia down to Florida and then all the way over to Texas. All right, we end on a feel-good story. Always want to have a feel-good story when you end. Video shows girl flee suspected kidnapper as she walks to school. A frightening video shows a man jumping out of his car and apparently trying to kidnap an 11-year-old girl as she walked to school in Glendale, Arizona. Police say the girl was able to escape.
Way to school, you're going to see it happen right here. Shocking surveillance video showing that man turning his car around, then pulling up to that 11-year-old girl on Friday. This happened in Arizona. The man gets out,
what
chasing, lunging at the girl. She runs off screaming. She quickly reports the incident to workers at the school. They called police, and within hours, they found and arrested that attacker. The girl told police she saw him right outside her home shortly before this happened. Court documents show he lives nearby, but police say they don't know each other. Tonight, they're commending the young girl's courage, which helped them to quickly make an arrest.
Are you kidding me? Officers were able to obtain video of the incident, get description of the suspect and his vehicle. They found the suspect still wearing the same clothing in the area a short time later. Officers arrested Joseph Leroy Ruiz, 37, a resident of the area, for attempted kidnapping. It is not believed that he knew the victim. Okay. This video. The guy jumps out of his car, and all you see is the girl starting to run away. And the guy is wearing, like, a hoodie and very baggy pants of some sort. At first, they look like track pants. Kind of hard to tell. How do I put this in slow motion? And she runs, and he tries to run. But man, he tries to run after her for about 12 steps. But boy, is he slow. That is not a good... He's more like shuffling. What did he think was going to happen? So you pull, okay, in broad daylight, you pull up with your car. You think you're going to jump out of the car and grab her and put her in the car? You think there's not going to be a struggle? You think if she runs away that it's a good idea? Maybe, I mean, right, like she starts to run away and you start to run after her because you're doing it because you're a kidnapper, you're doing a kidnapping, and then you're like, wait, maybe this isn't such a good idea. I should probably just let this one go because I'm going to draw attention to myself by running after this person, which is probably a good idea. But man, that was not a good attempt. Like, you could have closed the gap with a little bit of a sprint there and at least taken her down. Wait, what am I doing? What am I saying? Do not send this to Glendale police. This is ridiculous. I'm just so always baffled by these. It was not a very well thought out crime here. Can you imagine you're a girl just walking to school and like, oh my God, I'm getting kidnapped. It's a kidnapping attempt again. Not again, but like, you do tell kids all the time, if someone tries to jump out of the car and kidnap you, you have to run away. Never accept a ride from a stranger. One time I was running to school and I wasn't late or anything, but I was just like jogging because I'm a kid and I don't know, I felt like jogging. So someone thought I was late or like behind schedule or something. They pulled up to me and like, do you need a ride? I'm sure they were completely 100% legit. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. But it could have been a kidnapping that day. Had I been like, sure, I'll take a ride, I could have been kidnapped. You guys never know. But actually, it looked like a mom with another kid in the car. So I'm pretty sure they were just going to the same place I was going to. And I just looked like I was in a rush because I'm weird. I just ran randomly. All right, well, the girl got away. So that's a positive news story. Anything else we need to go over? I visited the Run Club recently here in you know, wherever I am. And it's much flatter here than where I come from, up in the New England area. And so I'm running along and the guy is telling me, oh man, I moved here from Florida and it is so, I really had to get used to the hills here. And I was like, what are you talking about? It's just so interesting to me how people can have such different experiences in life, right? And I think this is probably level one, but like, oh, you in Florida, you think that here is hilly. We did a run, 5 miles. I looked at my phone. The elevation gain, I've never seen a lower elevation gain in my entire life. It was like 96 over a 5 mile distance. And in New Hampshire, it would be 300. I'm like, okay, I don't think there's any hills here. So it's like the guy I was talking to last time I was here. And he said, oh, I'm going to move to Pittsburgh. And I know what you're going to say. It's too cold. The weather is bad. But trust me, you get used to it. And my son's been there for a while. And he can wear short sleeves when it's 42. And I was like, I'm from New Hampshire. So, yeah, Pittsburgh weather's not that bad. And the guy goes, whoa, I've never been that far north. I'm from a place people can't even comprehend how bad it is to live there. And it's very hilly. It's not very hilly. I mean, it's not like Colorado. Colorado is hilly. Like, if I moved from New Hampshire to Colorado, I'd be like, wow, this is hilly, I assume. I'm only saying that because there's a mountain and there's a Denver, which is really high up. So I have to assume there's some sort of hill that gets you there. Maybe parts of Colorado are very flat. And people from Colorado are going, what are you talking about? There's no hills here. When I just think of mountainous state, I just think of that state. Right. I've never been there, though, so I don't even know. Way back in the day, remember I tried a couple times to do like gaming streams or gaming videos. I wonder if I should get back to that. But I always figured like, no, I'm not entertaining and I'm not good enough to do. Maybe I'm entertaining, but I'm just not good enough at video games to like play it and have anyone want to watch. But then I was thinking, I'm actually so bad at video games. It might be actually entertaining to watch someone fail so hard, because ever since I don't talk about this much, but like, you know, I've played video games since I was three, mostly on computer. And way back in the day, even when Counter-Strike, the original, was out, I would play it for, you know, several hours on the weekend, and I was always the worst. I was never good. My kill-death ratio was always, like, 2 kills to 10 deaths. Like, off the charts bad. People would be like, you are, what are you, 3? You're so bad at this game. So I figure maybe, like, I'm so bad at video gaming, I could start a stream where I'm just so bad that people would watch. Like, so bad where I throw a grenade directly to where I'm running, and then I immediately forget I threw the grenade. So I go, oh, I got to run over there and, like, heal my teammate. So I run over there, and I blow up because I just threw my grenade. I go, oh, I mean, I just ride the grenade. All right. Thanks for listening to an episode of News with Nick. Is the news even fun? And is the news even interesting? Is anything funny anymore? Who knows? The older you get, the less things are funny. The more things are bad. Just kidding. Everything's fine.
Tender said it's on the house, you make me want to fall.